I don't think that affairs are the end of the world. I think we've all go. I used to say, like, oh, if someone cheated on me, I would break up with them. No, I don't know what would happen. To be honest, you guys, I think that in a lot of relationships, couples come back from it. It actually can make them stronger. You're listening to Sex with Emily. I'm Dr. Emily, and I'm here to help you prioritize your pleasure and liberate the conversation around sex. Infidelity. It's one of the most painful emotional experiences out there, but once the pain heals, it can also create enormous opportunities for growth and self-reflection. In this episode, I'll unpack infidelity and all the ways it can play out. It doesn't always mean the end of a relationship. Sometimes monogamy just isn't the right fit. Other times, it means a couple needs to work on deepening intimacy and trust with one another. So whether you've been cheated on or you're the cheater, I've got advice to help you work through it to create the love life you want. Intentions with Emily. For each episode, I want to start off by setting an intention for the show, and I encourage you all to do the same. Well, my intention is to give you tools for processing infidelity, whether it's fresh, in the past, or something you haven't dealt with at all. I want you to be equipped to move through it with as much grace as possible. Please rate and review Sex with Emily wherever you listen to the show. My new article, Ask Emily, My Wife Cheated, is up on sexwithemily.com. Check out my YouTube channel, social media, and TikTok. It's all at Sex with Emily for more sex tips and advice. If you want to ask me questions, leave me your questions or message me at sexwithemily.com/askemily or call my hotline 559-TALK-SEX or 559-825-5739. Just include your name, your age, where you live, and how you listen to the show. And it's totally cool to change your name or choose to remain anonymous. Today's episode is presented by Vush, the sexual wellness brand all about making sex toys more inclusive. But stick around till the end of this episode to hear how you can save on Vush products this Black Friday and Cyber Monday. Enjoy this episode. Attention, pleasure seekers. What if I told you there was a toy that was so iconic that it practically set the standard for all my favorite products? Allow me to introduce or reintroduce to you the Magic Wand. Dubbed the Cadillac of Vibrators, the Magic Wand is more than just a toy. It's a culture icon, a symbol of power and unapologetic pleasure. I mean, do you know any other toys that have been praised in Time magazine? Didn't think so. With a unique rumble that resonates deep within, the Magic Wand Original is not just a product, it's a trusted confidant. And it's a sure thing. Never had an orgasm? Try a magic wand. Never given your party a full body massage? Try the magic wand. Listen, it's rightfully earned accolades like Vibrator of the Year for decades. I've been so obsessed with my magic wand, I even drilled holes in my bedside table so that she's always next to me in case I need her. Well, that was years ago, because now there are multiple iterations of the magic wand, allowing you to pick whatever model fits your lifestyle. You can go wireless with the magic wand rechargeable, tiny with the magic wand mini, or micro. Micro's really mini. Or go for variety with the Magic Wand Plush. The best part though, all of them have the same powerful orgasmic rumble that made the original so popular. So if you're ready to make some magic, visit sexwithemily.com/magicwand and discover why the Magic Wand continues to cast a spell on the world. Magic Wand, not just a vibrator, an icon of pleasure. Before we get started, I just want to remind you all that this is a best of episode that may include outdated language, like references to gender. I started using the terms penis owner and vulva owner in around 2020 in order to be more inclusive of all gender identities and expressions. We're always learning and growing here at Sex with Emily and can only continue to do so with your continued feedback. So thank you.
Monogamy, not what you think. So, normal monogamy, what does that mean? So we are taught pretty much the only option we have here in America, when I think about it, for and in many other countries, is that we sign up for monogamy because that's really our only option. We say we're going to be monogamous and we're going to live happily ever after. But the truth is, a lot of us blindly sign up for monogamy and we don't really think what that means because we make assumptions. Well, I'm sure my partner agrees that being monogamous means we're not going to sleep with anyone else. We're not going to have emotional affairs. We're not going to do anything that's going to hurt each other, even, you know, kissing somebody else or whatever it is. Our partner will not do that. But the irony is that so many monogamous couples have never even talked about this. They've never said, are we on the same page with what monogamy means? We don't negotiate. We don't talk about it. You know, just saying we're going to be loyal isn't enough. Some other ways to drill down is just to talk about the specifics. Now, one partner might think that looking at pornography is cheating. One partner would think masturbating is betrayal. And others think, well, if you're sexting or having cyber sex without ever meeting another person might also be cheating. I hear from a lot of you who are concerned about your partner's, you know, masturbation habits. You're like, why do they masturbate? They said they weren't going to. So these are all kind of fall under the what does monogamy mean to you umbrella. What I like about this is that many heterosexual couples have this assumed monogamy. But then what we see is they have their lives torn apart because of affairs and cheating. A lot of these couples have never even talked openly about their sex life before the infidelity. They had to wait till something happened and they never talked about it. So that's why I think just opening up this topic and saying, you know, let's talk about what our feelings are about monogamy. Like, let's really drill down and see, like, so you can find out if you're on the same page. And I think that you can make a contract. You have to send it to your lawyer, but maybe it's just like a written document that you both agree on. And then every year on your anniversary, you go over it and you're like, how does this feel to you? Is this still part of our commitment? This is still part of our vows. I mean, because we're allowed to create whatever vows we want. Couples can understand that just being married or in a relationship is enough to ensure monogamy, because we see this all the time with cheating and affairs. So if you guys can kind of drill down and talk about this stuff, I think it could really make a big difference. So in negotiating your contract, you know, you might decide that, you know, maybe not the first time you do it, but maybe we want to question monogamy. Maybe we would like to open up the relationship, or maybe there'd be a way we would play with another couple or something. And so I think when you do that, then you actually have your rules and you have the agreement. I think that things in that agreement would be like, you want to make sure that you guarantee safer sex. So if you're going to be with someone else, you would commit to like using condoms and using protection. And also this contract, you can renegotiate, like I said, every year and maintain dialogue. You know, I love this intentional dialogue where one partner is like receiving the information, the other is a sender. So when a partner is speaking and the other's listening, you reflect back what was heard. You don't judge, you don't interrupt, you don't interact, and you use I statements like, I really want to commit to you that if something happens, I'm going to bring it up to you, or that I'm not going to sleep with someone else without your knowledge. I won't sleep with any friends of ours, or whatever kind of rules you make. And then you listen to what they have to say. It's really a respectful form of communication where you can even repeat back what they're saying and write it down so you know that you're both on the same page. I just want to remind you that jealousy exists with monogamy or non-monogamy. And in fact, there was a survey in this that says that people in monogamous relationships have way more jealousy and fewer tools to deal with that jealousy than people who are in non-monogamous relationships. So they're just like off the charts with jealousy when there's often nothing to actually be jealous about because they don't have this dialogue. So my bottom line of this is, if you haven't talked about some of these things and you're just under the assumption that we both think the same thing, and I hope that you find out that you do, but how great to bring it up and have this new point of contact, this new way to start talking about your intimate relationship, because I think you'll really be surprised at what other topics might come up that you've never explored before. I think whether you're in a long-term relationship or a shorter-term relationship, and I think it's helpful in both cases. In a long-term relationship, things might have changed or you're making assumptions, and in a new one, what better way to find out if you guys both actually think about monogamy in the same way. So I like the idea of having contracts. I like the idea of just starting any kind of sex conversation with your partner, because that will continue into your relationship and really fuel the sexual health of your entire relationship. And then finally, things you know about women and sex that are wrong. I always love some good sex myths, and here's some more. I think they lay out some really good ones. So Wednesday Martin, she wrote a new book, Untrue, Why Nearly Everything We Believe About Women, Lust, and Infidelity Is Wrong, and How New Science Can Set Us Free. Martin deconstructs the basic building blocks of like everything we've ever learned about sex, from the idea that men have higher sex drives than women and the belief that men are more likely to cheat. We've essentially inherited this cultural script. We've been told this. We've been taught that men are more sexual. They have stronger libidos. Monogamy is much harder for men. Men want the novelty and men are more visual. They crave all this exciting sexual experiences. After this study, you know, came out, and it is science, they find out that this narrative that we all believe to be true has fallen apart and it's really no longer the case. When I first started this, I remember one of the first things that blew my mind was that I assumed that women were always the ones who are more frigid, to use a lack of a better word right now, that women were like, oh no, I have a headache tonight, dear. This is what we always saw. We saw this in movies and television. And the guys were like, oh God, she's always got a headache. You know, men want more sex. I truly believed it. And now I've, you know, come to find out it's not true. But this is just one of those areas where that's actually science here backing us up. So another interesting point from this, female infidelity might be on the rise. So we said researchers have believed that men are more likely to cheat than women, but this is based on some old study they did with friggin' fruit flies. They did male flies versus female fruit flies, and they decided that men are more likely to cheat. Guess what? That one really didn't hold any water. But what they found out now was that married women in 2010 were 40% more likely to cheat than they were in 1990. Perhaps we've even evolved to be promiscuous. There's been a lot of evolutionary biology. A lot of books have talked about the fact that it might be beneficial for women to be promiscuous. I'm not encouraging it. I'm just saying this is why this is probably true, because just getting more variety of sperm, like we're kind of hedging our bets against males, they can be infertile. Men might be the one holding up the pregnancies as well. Now, this is stuff that's been written about for decades, but the truth is we might just have evolved. Women might be just as promiscuous, if not more than men. And another point here is long-term relationships may be tougher for women than they are for men. Here's another one of those things. We always believe, and I do think this is a cultural norm, that men are kind of just struggling through it. They want to have way more sexual partners than women. But this is a pretty interesting fact here, that men will be pretty happy in a long-term relationship if they're having sex regularly with their partner. But women, in the aggregate, are more likely to report sexual dissatisfaction and relationship dissatisfaction, even if they're having sex with their long-term partners. So this distinction is important. So it's saying basically men are good in relationships long-term if they're having regular sex. Women, even if they're having that regular sex, they still might not be happy in the relationship. I love laying out some debunking some myths so we can all have a better understanding of how we all work and how we can all work better together to have more mind-blowing sex.
Okay, now I'm going to take some of your questions about infidelity. This first one is from Bill in his 60s from Pennsylvania. He's in a situation where he's the cheater.
Hey, Emily. Hey. Nice talking to you.
You too. What's going on, Bill?
My situation, I got into a situation where I wandered, and now the person that I wandered with wants to take it further. First, it was just sex with a friend with benefits. Now she wants me to leave my wife and move in with her.
All right, Bill. So what do you want?
I don't want to do that.
Okay. Why do you think you cheated?
It was a situation where, I don't know, I was just, it was offered and I took up on it.
Okay, but how long have you been with your wife?
40-some years.
Okay. Yeah, that's a long time to be with one person. How are things with your wife right now?
Well, that's the problem. She's dropped off sexually, and I haven't.
Right. And you guys have talked about it, and you've tried to bring your sex life back to life?
And she's, not interested.
Right. See, this is what happens in relationships when, both parties are not participating in the health of their sex life. But Bill, I mean, are you asking me, because I understand you're saying this woman wants you to leave your wife for her after you've had sex with her once, but I mean, I don't think that's a good idea. Do you?
No, this has been going on for 6 months.
Oh, you've been cheating on her. Okay. I thought you said you just happened. So 6 months. So obviously 40 years, you're with one person. This is very, very exciting to be having sex with someone else. It's going to feel so, you're going to have all those chemicals flying, the feel good hormones, all those things. However, that can easily be intoxicating, but it's not necessarily, I think, the healthy thing to do unless you're ready to leave your wife. So what's your question? Is your question?
Well, how do I get out of this situation without causing a, because she's threatened to spill the beans.
You got to come clean to your wife. Maybe this will be the thing that brings you back together again. If you very carefully talk to your wife and say, you know what, you have to end it, Bill. And you can tell her you already told your wife. See how she goes when you end it with her. But I think either way, you probably should, because it's going to be in your mind. So it's better that you tell her than she tells her. And I think that should not be a reason not to do it. And, our partners are pretty resilient. Relationships can be resilient if you handle this in a way. Now, I don't know your wife, and many times this can go wrong, but I can tell you this, that if you just say, I'm ashamed for this thing that happened. I'm really sorry. I've had this affair, and you know, I know that it wasn't the right thing to do, and I really hope that we can go to therapy and we can work on our relationship and rebuild the trust and learn how to be intimate again, because it's really important to me to connect sexually. I feel like we're roommates, and you know, you got to do it without blaming or shaming or making her feel bad. And just let her know that you love her and you're very sorry that it's hurt her, and she's going to be shocked. And there's actually a really good protocol to kind of go through when this happens. I think you should see it there. I know you have to see a therapist, because when trust is broken in a relationship, it's really hard for couples, nearly impossible for couples to rebuild it on their own.
Okay, thank you.
You're so welcome, Bill. Let me know how it goes. I'm here for you every night. Here's my take on it, affairs. You guys, it is true that people, I don't think that affairs are the end of the world. I think I used to say, like, oh, if someone cheated on me, I would break up with them. No, I don't know what would happen. To be honest, you guys, I think that in a lot of relationships, couples come back from it. It actually can make them stronger. They're like, because then you realize that usually the cheating happens. If they were still having sex and they've been communicating for 40 years, they've been together and things were healthy, it wouldn't happen. It typically happens in relationships where things have fallen apart. You're not healthy. You're not communicating. You might even be having lots of sex. So it's not always about the sex. It's about a lot of things. But that's why you have to keep the health of your relationship strong. So I think in these cases, the affair can actually, like, if you go to therapy, can rebuild. And if it doesn't, you know, it can also, some people can never get past it. This is from Mackenzie, 22 in Nebraska. Hey, Emily, I love your podcast and it's helped my sex life a lot. I'm kind of at an emotional crossroads, so I'm hoping you can help. I love my boyfriend of 2 years so much. He's helped me grow as a person, learn to love myself, and we build a life together. We both have major trust issues. I've cheated on him before and he on me, and I want to get past it, but I don't know how. Anytime we argue, it seems like he brings up when I cheated, and that's his way out of an argument, and I feel like he never tries to see anything from my point of view, especially when he's been drinking. After drinking, he gets either really nice and sweet or can say some pretty hurtful things. I don't want to break up because when we're not fighting, we're so, so good together. We never run out of things to talk about, and he makes me feel beautiful and sexy, and our sex life is great. I'm trying so hard to rebuild his trust in me, but I feel like every time we argue, we're way back to square one. Any help is appreciated because I'm tired of feeling so awful after an argument. Thanks in advance. Okay, Mackenzie, trust is one of the hardest things, if not the hardest thing, to rebuild in a relationship. Because it's a basic tenet too. I mean, we talk about trust being one of the building blocks of a healthy relationship. If you truly know you can trust your partner, when that is shattered, it doesn't just grow back over time. There's all these unsolved issues. So you can't move forward. And when I'm confused here, I want to clarify, is you're saying that you've forgiven him, but he's not forgiven you. So I'm curious why, and especially when he's drunk, he's still bringing it up. Is it because when he's drunk, there's less inhibitions, and that means that it's really bothering him all the time? Because I don't think it's fair at all for him to keep throwing this infidelity into your face, because you did decide to agree to each other, and he's holding on to it. Plus, he cheated on you. So it's a tit for tat. Also, the drinking habits. I'm telling you, I know the way you laid that out, this seems kind of normal. You know, it seems like this is what you've learned to accept. We often sort of normalize patterns in our partners because we love them and we want it to feel okay. And so I'm just telling you, after reading this, I had a red flag go up about his drinking, because it can be really disconcerting and definitely not relaxing at all to be with someone who you never know who's going to show up after they've been drinking. Is it the guy who's going to be attacking you for your past indiscretions, or is he going to be all loving and sweet? So anybody whose personality changes like that when they drink, just put a note in that and have you to pay attention to it and see if that's something that also needs to be addressed. I know it's easier to hold on to like the good things, and you love him and he makes you feel beautiful and sexy and all those things, you know, I think are hugely, hugely important. But if you guys are in this toxic cycle and he keeps rehashing it and you really love this guy and you want to be with him, I'm going to say you got to go to couples therapy, because on your own, it's really hard for couples to get past this without some extra help. And so I think if you go see a counselor a few times, you'll be able to make some inroads into the trust issue. And once you do that, you'll be able to look at the other things in your relationship much clearer and see what else comes up for you, or if it's just still smooth sailing after that. So let me know how it goes. Thanks, Mackenzie. Let's talk to John, 54, New York. He wants to talk about infidelity. Hey, John. Thanks for calling.
Hi, how are you?
Great.
How are you tonight?
Really doing well, thank you.
My situation is kind of, I don't know how to explain it really. It's my wife and I have been married for 26 years. We have three kids, two of which are special needs. And my wife had an affair with our next-door neighbors across the street who we were very, very close friends with, did everything together, spent a lot of time together. And she had an affair with my friend or woman's husband across the street. And it went on for a while. And we had confronted them, the wife and I had confronted them, and they denied it. And then 2 years later, we finally confirmed that it happened. And, you know, obviously she had denied it. And, you know, I thought we were in a very good relationship. You know, sexually, we were pretty active, and there wasn't any,
right,
you know, hesitancy in terms of our sex life. But she then started to have affairs with other people as well, two of which were women. One was another neighbor, and the woman's husband was involved with watching them. And the only way I came across it was finding pictures that she was saving and then sending to this other husband next door. And it was kind of like this really weird cycle of what was going on. And I had really followed what was going on. I documented everything. I took pictures of her phone and had pictures, so I had the proof of it. When I finally confronted her on all of it, you know, she denied it again. And then, you know, all of the stuff that I had, all the notes that I had taken down and all the things that I kind of harboring inside, I finally opened up and let it all out. And I just haven't really dealt with it real well. Mm. It's been a couple of years now. We're still together.
Oh, wow. Okay, John, to context here. Okay, so you've been together for a while, and this happened a few years ago.
Yeah.
And you're still living together. Is she still cheating?
I don't know. I don't think so. The way I used to be able to, you know, find out ways of how, if she was, the way, you know, I used to be able to track her phone and look in her phone and, you know, stuff, whether it was through Facebook or
Instagram. Well, John, have you guys gone to therapy? Because here's the thing. Listen, infidelity, and when couples go through this and they break trust, you have to go to therapy to rebuild it. It takes a lot of work. It doesn't come back because time is passing. It doesn't get easier. It gets harder, which sounds like that's where you're at. You've been able to keep busy, keep your head, nose down, whatever. But you, this is therapy, and you both have to go and rebuild the trust, or it's not going to work.
Yeah, I went myself. She went initially, and but we never did go together, but we did go separately.
Will she go together?
She's not, you know, once, just even like when I confronted her on what was going on, she, you know, she completely shut down, and we really haven't even talked about a lot of it since it's gone on. It's
in 2 years? So you found out all this cheating happened 2 years ago. You presented her with all the data. She's like, that didn't really happen, and now you guys are still sharing a bed and going about business as usual?
Yeah.
How are you doing that, John? really, that's not easy.
It's difficult. I really do it for my family.
Yeah.
My kids, and, you know, keep some normalcy with them. And, you know, it's kind of like Irish guilt. You know, you can live with it forever as long as it doesn't affect anybody else.
Yeah, I know that. Well, I think we all have a little bit of guilt. I'm not Irish, but I get it. John, so, but what I'm saying, I feel like you shouldn't suffer, though. Like, I feel like you are tough and you're being strong here, and maybe some ways you blame yourself. I don't know what you do in your head to make this okay, but I don't want, you know, you should be having a, you know, a loving, your kids can feel it too. Like, I know this whole, like, staying together for the kids to keep normalcy, but I'm telling you, if mommy and daddy aren't getting along or there's tension, they feel that without you saying a word. So it's not healthy.
Yeah, it doesn't, it isn't that way. And I can just, another added on top, we haven't had sex since this happened. All the information that I had and all the data that I collected, she destroyed. And, you know, when we were having sex, even though I knew what was going on, it was just different because she was different in having sex with me than she probably would have been I know she was in the past. And I could tell she was different. She was doing different things. She was reacting differently.
Right. Well, John, we know she cheated. We know this is all true. So what are you going to do about it now? Like, do you guys share a bed?
We do.
Okay. I mean, are you asking me, like, would you like to have your wife back to how things were and you want to have sex with her again? You know, recreate that intimacy and connect again? Is that what you want?
Yeah, I think that's why
you called.
I'm still here.
Right.
I just don't know how to approach it just because she is so standoffish about when you confront her on, she just shuts down.
Right, but what are you afraid of, John, right now? Like, what do you have to lose by just being like, listen, I love us. I love our relationship. I want to make it work. We can let that stuff go. For the sake of our marriage and our family, let's go to a marriage counselor once a week for the next month. At least try that out. 3 months, actually, is what you'll need to really feel something. But a month could work. I mean, John, you have to. There's literally no other choice. And I feel like she's somehow instilled the fear of God in you, or you feel bad about something. But you, this is, John, this is about you and being a good parent, because it's about the mental health of your home. So therapy is not an optional activity right now with what you've been through and with what you deal with your children. You have a lot going on in that house. And I'm sorry, my heart is like so open for you and goes out to you, because it's like not easy. And you're taking the weight of the world on, John. So I just need you to find a good therapist and make it happen however you can. That's the solution. I don't care what she says, really. You got to keep doing it, John. You know how to talk to her. You can do it too, and you'll feel good about this. You'll at least make some movement, or if she won't do it, then you can't stay with her.
I just don't want to make it worse than it is. I mean, it's not bad now. It really isn't.
But it's because not bad because you're walking around. Yeah, but John, you know, you're suffering. That's no way to live with someone. You're sharing a bed. You're not having sex. You're not talking about this huge breach of trust in your marriage that happened several times, where you're probably feeling humiliated and it's your neighbors and you still live there and you're walking around taking the brunt of it every single day. And you are suffering deeply in ways that I don't think you even know yet. I think it's okay if she gets angry right now. Like, I feel like, I don't know, John, I feel like, I mean, you get to decide. You've been living how you're living, but I think that therapy is not good, especially with what you're dealing with. Kid, yeah, got to go to therapy. John, let me know how it goes. I'll be here. Thank you for calling, John. We're thinking about you.
When we're back, I'm talking with singer-songwriter Tom Goss about how he navigated infidelity and opening up his marriage to his husband. So don't go anywhere. Okay, I'm talking with Tom Goss, singer-songwriter who wrote an entire album about traveling with his husband and a new lover. His music touches on his experience being in an open marriage and what he's learned navigating this new type of relationship.
Yeah, and my husband and I were in a monogamous relationship for 10 years.
Okay.
And, you know, it started to be really hard for my husband to... He really needed something different.
Okay.
And it wasn't a... You know, it's really easy at this point in time, 4 years later, to talk about, oh, yeah, and then we just had this, like, nice conversation, but obviously it didn't go that
right.
easily.
Well, didn't
time.
He cheat on you?
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's what happened, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's okay. I'm sorry. You're good, though.
I'm good.
I'm not sorry.
I love how blunt you were about that. No, it was like the weirdest.
You said it wasn't working for him, and I'm like, well, I know that he cheated, and then, but,
yeah.
But the amazing thing is that he cheated, but then you were able to, I'm sure, and that was painful.
Oh, yeah. I mean, my entire world crumbled. You know, and I think it's really interesting to me, you know, because we're told you do two things when somebody, infidelity is in a relationship.
Yeah.
You break up with the person, you say, fuck you, you never talk to them again, you burn all their things, right?
Right.
We've all seen the movie.
Exactly.
The second thing you do is you forgive them, you make all sorts of ultimatums, and you put a really tight leash on them, and you resent them for the rest of your life.
Right.
Right? These are like your two options.
There is a third, I mean, well, maybe there's a fourth, because we'll get there. Sometimes for people, they can rebuild trust and they get over it, but only if they have intense therapy. But
yeah.
Mostly they don't do that.
No, or, absolutely.
Or what you've done.
Or the same thing. Intense therapy. And then, you know, being a little more honest about what my husband was struggling with at the time. And he was going through all sorts of his own things. And this is how it was coming out. And I know this is going to sound a little bit like victim shaming, but part of me was like, why am I not in a relationship where my husband and I can have this conversation openly? And it doesn't have to be deceptive.
Right.
And it could be something that's really open and honest and understand. So I went into the open relationship just really supporting him on his journey and really wanting to help him discover what he needed. But I also was a complete wreck, and my entire world was falling apart because everything that I believed in, the foundation of that, you know, my life, my art, you know, everything had kind of just crumbled.
Right.
And so I really needed to go on my own journey to figure out what I needed from me, because for me, it was like whatever I needed to support the relationship with my husband. And when that got pulled away,
right,
I was left with almost nothing.
Well, were you saying initially then, so you found out of this indiscretion and then you're like, okay, well, I get that he has to open it up. And then you tried to open it up right away, or you just sort of waited? Because people call in all the time. And I think that there's more of an interest now. People are realizing that monogamy isn't for everybody and that open relationships aren't just for sex addicts.
Sure.
Or crazy people, or people, oh, it's never going to work, because monogamy doesn't work for a lot of people.
Yeah.
So your journey to that, it wasn't like he, he had this indiscretion, you're like, sign me up for polyamory or open relationships.
Yeah.
You had
to go through the pain. Yeah.
And you had to, but then you've learned how to.
Well, it's been interesting to me, you know, because I had to figure out who I was as a sexual being. Yeah. Just initially, I mean, I went from being a virgin, you know, I hadn't even really gone on any date. I thought I was asexual until I was like 23.
You did?
Yeah. And I was in Catholic seminary. I was a celibate. And then I met my husband, and he's really the first person I ever dated. So for me, it was also like, who am I as a sexual being? And that was an opportunity for me to go on my own journey. And what is sex to me? What is intimacy? What is relationship to me? And I really had to go through a lot. And I'm still going through a lot of trying to figure out what that is.
So how long have you been on this journey? When did your relationship
about 4 years,
okay.
And it was probably a year of it was a lot of me just like breaking and trying to heal and trying to understand what that meant. And then, you know, even going on a date, we like call them dates, you know, was hard initially at first. And there was a lot of shame involved, not only from me to myself, but also then my husband towards me, which when I was like, wait, I don't understand what's happening, right? Because we're dealing with all these social constructs of what these things say. Like, we're an open relationship, but does that mean
that you don't have jealousy?
Don't have jealousy, or you don't have these preconceived notions that have been ingrained in us from every single piece of information we've gotten about relationships and society at large for every second of our life. So there was really a lot of that. And what I found out for myself that...
Yeah, what'd you find?
I find that emotional intimacy is as important, if not more important, than physical intimacy for me.
Okay.
And so for me to be physically intimate with a person, I really want to have an emotional connection, and I really want to share that. And that led to falling in love for me with somebody who wasn't my husband. And this record really is about that journey. And you really start facing a lot of questions. You know, I keep talking about the societal constructs for what love is. And when all of a sudden you're in this different relationship, you're realizing like, oh, wait. That's not what's going on. It's like when you come out as gay, you're supposed to be a horrible person and a sinner and all these things. And you're like, wait, no, I'm not.
You have to keep peeling back going, wait, this doesn't serve me. Someone told me this. And you were you were in the priesthood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, that's crazy to me, too. You were in the priesthood. And so, of course, you probably thought you were asexual because you're like, not only because of that, also because of the religion, being studying to be a priest.
It really was about like, I'm attracted to chubby men. Oh. So it was another social construct thing. Like, I didn't know that I could be that, right? Like, I wrestled all through college. So I'm showering with 60 guys every single day.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, I'm not attracted to them, so I'm not gay. I'm not attracted to women, so I'm not straight. But I wasn't like, I should look at this, you know,
so
this
chubby
guy.
You saw, wait, let me get this straight. So you're up until what age?
Probably 23.
And you're walking down the street, and then all of a sudden you see a chubby guy.
It wasn't like that. I fell in love. Just like I probably.
Because you emotionally connected.
Because emotionally connected. And there was a physical attraction to the chubby guy. And then I was like, oh, like, okay, I'm into your belly. Okay, I'm into like these parts of your body that is supposed to be gross. But for me, I just like, oh, yeah, I want more of that.
Right. You know? But I love it. And you gave yourself permission, even though society might be like, that's not how most people love or whatever. You figured it out.
Exactly.
Then you wrote this album because I would think the best time to create art is when you're going through turmoil and figuring out who you are.
Oh,
so the songs were
so
just coming
right
out of you.
Like, yeah, I mean, this, I mean, it was, it's so ripe for material. And we would get into these fights sometimes. And some of my newest singles called La Bufadora. And we would get into these fights and he would say something and it would often be like, the saddest, hardest thing I've ever heard in my life.
Your husband.
Yeah, when we're in these discussions or we're in a fight, and I don't mean fight, but I mean, sometimes you're just talking, you're being like so honest and you say
things that you think you can't say and then it comes out and then he says,
and
you're raw
and everybody's open and you're just like, I would sometimes just be like, say those words in my head over and over and over again so I could just write them word for word in a song. Because I'm like, well, you can't beat that.
Give me some of the words right now. Can you tell me the
key? Yeah, there's a song called Quebec, and the chorus is, we were walking down the street in Quebec City, and we were trying to connect, but we were just like struggling, and he stopped. My husband can't walk and talk at the same time. He just stops, and all of a sudden he's behind me. I'm like, oh, he has something to say. You know what I mean?
Oh, wow, okay.
So he stopped, and he just like broke down in the freezing cold, and he said, we are not us. There is another us to us. We are not special. We are no longer special. Straight up.
Wow.
That's the chorus of Quebec, word for word.
That's amazing. He's so poetic. Sounds like it's I wouldn't mind that he stopped. Because for me, if someone couldn't walk and talk, we'd be done. But if he stopped and then said something super profound, I'd be like, okay, maybe this could work. Wow.
And that was his truth.
So there is no us, right? So have you found that there's also an us in you? Like, have you bought that us back together?
Well, that's not my perspective, right? So that's his perspective. So I always felt like there was an us. I've always loved him. The reason that I went on this journey was because I loved him. And in some ways, I completely sacrificed myself and everything that I believed in the world to help him on his own journey.
Right.
Like, if that's not love, I don't know what is.
Exactly. Is your husband in the same place that he's looking for emotional intimacy as well? Or for him, is it more physical? Because that could also be another thing you guys got to
figure out. Yeah, I think we both like emotional intimacy. Like, we're both not like anonymous type of people.
Right.
You know, but I think for me, it's, you know, just to be honest, like, I'm better at maintaining relationships than my husband. My husband wants the emotional connection, but then, like, people kind of annoy him. Like, yeah. I want to be alone, right. You know, whereas that's not really me.
So how have you guys figured out to work these boundaries together, wanting different things? Because you've been 4 years in, you said?
So many conversations.
Ad nauseum, right? Like,
ad nauseum.
Yeah.
Yeah, almost every day. And yeah, definitely lots of therapy. I mean, I think I'm really grateful for the infidelity because it really taught me how to communicate better. We're still horrible sometimes.
Right.
Don't get me wrong.
It's a process. We're always learning.
It's a process, but I feel like there's things that my husband could say to me and there's things that I can say to him that we could have never in a million years said to each other before.
Okay, so what did you find out?
Oh, well, that's a really good question. I mean, I mostly just find out about the inner workings of people, right? Not only from a sexual standpoint, but from an emotional standpoint, from a historical standpoint, about how he's perceived his physicality and his sexuality throughout his life. You know, one of the things that I do a lot, obviously I've already mentioned that I like big men. I'm well known for talking about that in my art. And I made a song called Bears and I made a song called Round in All the Right Places. And I make these videos.
We watched your new videos and then we watched your video with the
interactive one.
Interactive video.
Oh, click.
Dude,
yeah,
that's
yeah.
Brilliant. I'm like, this should have 8 million views.
It should.
And we're going to put it on our show notes right now. So people, if you go to sexwithelmy.com, you got to check out. You got to check out Tom Goss's Click. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, it's
and
called
you choose
Click.
Your own ending.
Yeah, and you choose your own lovers and it's guys and girls and it's all sorts of shapes and
a
sizes.
A dating
and
app
colors.
Should buy this from you too.
Agreed.
You're hilarious and I
Thank
loved
you.
It. I loved watching you. Okay, so anyway, I'm just plugging your shit and interrupting you, but I can interrupt you to plug your shit.
I appreciate that.
Okay.
And I think part of like the thing that was hard for me initially is that I had spent all this time putting out this energy into the world to like uplift men of size and to create art that shows them in a different light than the rest of society shows them. And in that process, you know, I spent that time like uplifting my husband. And then all of a sudden my husband at almost 50 years old was feeling sexy and confident for the first time. And he wanted to explore that in a way which he didn't feel like he could before because he had, you know, issues about his body or issues about his size or issues about how people were seeing him. And so it was hard for me because I was like, in a way, like, well, I gave you that confidence and you turned it against me.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Oh, so you, before the incident happened, you were building him up in the relationship, making him feel good. And then he's like sexy. And then you're like, you had an affair. Dude, you've been through a lot.
But that's okay. I feel like
I get it. No,
that's my role in the world.
What I'm saying is I'm getting your journey. I'm riding with you here.
Yeah.
Like, that's another layer. You just keep throwing it down. All the stuff you guys went through.
But at some point in time, it has to be less about my hurt. Like, I can talk about my hurt all day, fine, whatever. But what does that accomplish? Like, at some point in time, I need to be empathetic to what he's going through and his experience in order to be sensitive to that and honest to that. And I can be honest and we can disagree, but as long as we're both being true to our experiences, I think that's the most important thing.
And what I love that you said, which I think a lot of people don't get, is that for many people, having an affair, like it's the most, like a lot of us think, oh God, I'd be done. All the stuff would be burned on the sidewalk. Is that for a lot of couples, it actually can be just what they needed to bring them closer together. It can actually break through to another level that they never experienced if they do the work, they stick with it, they go into therapy.
Yeah.
So now I'm going to assume that, not saying it's perfect, it's always challenging, but that you guys are closer and more intimate.
And in so many ways, we're closer. I'm not going to say that there's not...
I don't think it's perfect.
Yeah, it's not perfect. And there's things that still sometimes are hard for me. And,
which part about the open part being open, or which part's hard? Because people are so curious about how you navigate. How can you see your partner be in love with someone else? Like, people are just like, there's just no way.
I don't have to do that, but my husband has to do that, and I can't imagine how hard that is
because he's not in love with anyone else.
Because he's not in love with anybody else, and so I think sometimes, you know, he's in the process of struggling with that and working through that. The hardest thing for me, I mean, it took me like a week. It was like I was just going down that spiral of a week of catching the infidelity, realizing the magnitude of the infidelity, and then like crying a lot. And then you start doing this thing where you're like, well, he said he loved me, and I'm the one for him, and da 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 da. He said that June 22nd,
yeah,
2011. Was that true? Was this trip that I went on true?
Right.
Was this da 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 da? And you start going through this all these things, and I think the thing that I realized and what really helped me get to the next level is that all of the good things are true, all of the bad things are true. Like, everything happened. They all can coexist in the same person. And I think that's why I answer questions like this, because I think I see the world that way.
Yeah.
I don't see myself that way. For me, I'm like, no, you're horrible.
Right.
You didn't do that math equation right. You know what I mean?
Who cares? No, dude, I get it. I do that as well. So what I want to say then is that two of you right now, so you're dealing with, he has to deal with you being in love with someone else, but how do you feel about him having sex with others?
It changes a lot. You know, it kind of depends. Like, I kind of, you know, oftentimes I think it's really fun. I think it's kind of sexy. And I like the idea of him as like a strong, virile man. You know what I mean?
And other men are attracted to him.
Yeah.
So that could be hot.
We're attracted to different things. So we don't really experience these things together.
Right.
And that saddens me a little bit.
You don't experience like our physical.
Yeah, our physical types are so varied.
Okay, so you can't have like threesomes, perhaps.
Yeah. But sometimes we do couple swaps, and that's really
so fun.
And it's such a wonderful experience, you know, because we're so physically varying people.
Right.
I know he's not going to listen to this, and thank God.
Okay,
he's so mad at me for everything that I'm saying.
Oh.
Because.
But this is your life. You wrote songs. Your song, Tom Goss, your new album is about this.
I'm fine with it.
He'll be okay. He loves you. You've been together a long time. But here's the thing. You have an open relationship,
yeah,
but you have boundaries. Can you tell me what some of those boundaries are? I always talk about boundaries in the show, set boundaries, but it would be good to hear some real life examples.
Yeah. You know, so for us, the boundaries really were about, you know, obviously it's being safe.
Right.
We are obviously each other's primary partners, and that means we engage in sex and intimacy in a different level than other people than we do with other people. And so we need to be very careful that we are safe with each other, and that we always understand that we're not harming other people. A lot of it's about honesty, mm-hmm, and just telling people what we're doing. We don't really engage when we're together. We both travel a lot.
Okay.
So that kind of makes that piece of it a little easier.
That you're traveling?
Yeah. Or he's traveling, or right, I'm traveling. But when we're together, we're together. And so I have a lot of, you know, friends that I also am intimate with, and they're also friends with him. And they know when we're together, we're together. Like,
right,
if somebody crosses that boundary, or somebody, you know, then that's like, no. They need to respect my relationship, and they need to respect that my husband is my husband.
Right.
So, and that includes my lover.
Yeah. So it mostly happens when you guys are, one of you is out of town.
Yeah, for sure.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Because I wouldn't want to be like home and have nothing to do when my partner's out, unless I had planned it ahead of time.
Exactly.
Although everyone has their own rules, I understand.
Everybody has their own rules, and I do think that would be really hard on me if I was having like a particularly hard day, and then Mike was like, oh, well, I'm going to go on a date today, and I'm just like...
I think that's everyone's nightmare. So I think the fact that you explained that boundary, like it's when you're out of town or when you're not, I mean, some couples might be able to handle it, but it sounds like you guys are doing well. Thank you, Tom. How can everyone find you?
TomGossMusic.com or any of the social medias at TomGossMusic.
Okay. Thanks for being here.
And real quick before we go, I want to tell you a bit more about one of our sponsors, Vush. Vush is a sexual wellness brand just really shaking up the self-pleasure toy industry with their new line of products. They've completely reimagined sex toys to be more inclusive and dispel the idea that introducing toys to the bedroom should be awkward or uncomfortable, which I'm all about. And Bush is running a special Black Friday and Cyber Monday sales all through November, and my listeners can get 60% off their Hero Vibe, Empress 2, and the Big O bundle, which includes the Empress 2, the Myth, and their Intimate Gel. Just use code EMILYBFCM at checkout at their website, VushStimulation.com, for 60% off. That's code EMILYBFCM at checkout.
That's it for today's episode. See you on Friday. Thanks for listening to Sex with Emily. Be sure to like, subscribe, and give us a review wherever you listen to the podcast, and share this with a friend or partner. You can find me on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Sex with Emily. Oh, I've been told I give really good email. So sign up at sexwithemily.com. And while you're there, check out my free guides and articles for more ways to prioritize your pleasure. If you'd like to ask me about your sex life, dating, or relationships, call my hotline, 559-TALK-SEX. That's 559-825-5739. Or go to sexwithemily.com/askemily. Special thanks to Acast for powering the Sex with Emily podcast. Was it good for you? Email me, feedback@sexwithemily.com.